Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 190.
This week on the podcast, low voter turnout in South Carolina led to a Hillary Clinton blowout. That sounds about right.
Guys, Trump is going to bring us so much everything when he's president. Hopefully everything means pizza, but it might mean racism, so keep an eye out.
And if the latest GOP debate is any guide, the fruit salad of Marco Rubio's life involved his lunch money being stolen every single day, and lots of raspberries.
Anybody who's anybody in whatever the opposite of Mensa is endorsed Donald Trump this week.
And Super Tuesday is upon us this week, and all signs point to Texas proving once again that it can't be trusted.
Plus, nobody was safe from schoolyard logic this week, not even Hillary Clinton.
And adult armed militias are so 2015. So trendsetter Iowa is setting their sights on forming a toddler squad.
We'll have all this and more.
This is Brain Trust Live. Hey guys, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and you can find us on the web at www.braintrustlive.com.
That's right.
Also, we're on iTunes, we're on Stitcher, we're out
all
there,
the
guys.
Places.
You can find us wherever people
Twitter,
are finding podcasts.
Instagram.
Yeah.
I saw you posted on something on Instagram today.
I've
What got into you?
I don't know. I've been trying to really up our Instagram game because I feel like that's where the
it's
people
lacking.
Are now.
I know. That's what they're doing.
That's what they're doing. And
they
we
are.
Have so many pictures of adorable dogs that we could be posting on Instagram.
I know
that we're not a dog-themed podcast, but
who cares?
Dogs like politics too, I think.
Yeah.
They're dogs.
Yeah.
Of course they do.
I mean, Ray Ray and I were just reading Noam Chomsky. That's a photo that we posted recently.
Exactly.
She knows things.
Yeah, no, she knows a lot. It's not a lot of other stuff, but she knows a lot about politics.
That's right.
In any case, this week I nearly lost my mind about four times due to news coming out unexpectedly that I was not thinking would
this
happen.
This was a seminal week of the 2016 race, and so
also
for so many reasons,
a seminal week in world comedy.
Well, in world comedy, and I said to you at one point, I texted you, and I was like, "This is going to be a week that we
for
tell our children about."
Yeah, so it's for the books.
Right
this
here.
Week was for the books. It okay. So let's just dive in because there's a lot to get through here.
Yeah.
We're going to try not to go on for 7 hours like we normally
right.
do because we've been getting too excited, but this is an exciting
right.
week.
And the first story is the South Carolina primary because it was just yesterday, and
right.
we don't want to talk about that very
no.
much, so we're just going to
glaze
over
it.
We're going to pretend like it didn't happen, and then we're going to move on.
Well, here's the deal. So Hillary Clinton trounced Bernie Sanders
big
in
time.
This primary. She won by like 50 points.
Yeah.
It was the lowest percentage of young voters that have been in any of the primaries so far,
yes.
and so that's something that I think was telling it... Was she? I mean, she killed him with African American voters.
Yeah,
like
it was the lowest percentage of white voters.
It was the lowest percentage of white voters too. Yeah, but she won black voters 84-16.
Right.
And she also she won people over you know over 30, but she won people over 65 96-3.
No, and that's African Americans.
Oh, that's African Americans over
65.
Yes. 96-3.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is better than Obama did in 2008.
Yeah. Because he was the young
shellacking.
He was the young. Sort of candidate in 2008 too.
That's true.
So
yes.
old voters were skeptical of him of all
true.
Races because they hate
right.
young people, old
yeah.
people. That's one kind of prejudice that never goes away.
<That's true>.
So in any case, Sanders obviously knew that he was not going to win South Carolina. The writing was on the wall. He was on a non-Wi-Fi enabled plane to Minnesota when the results came in.
That's right.
I mean, they called it for her instantly.
Yeah.
There were no results to watch.
No.
But here's what there was to watch. Was my cousin Tina Liebling, who's a state senator in Minnesota, introducing Bernie Sanders at the rally
that's so
where he gave his big speech after South Carolina. It was like a day, I thought, my mom called me and I was like, oh my God, someone has died. That's the only possible thing that could have happened right now. And we've run out of old people in the family. So I was like, someone young died.
Oh no.
That's the worst.
Yeah.
And then she was like, Tina is on CNN. And I was like, why? And then I worried that Tina had died. And then I turned on the TV and Tina was introducing Bernie Sanders. And then Bernie Sanders referenced her in his speech several times.
That's exciting.
I think she's the highest level state rep in Minnesota to have endorsed him.
Yeah.
But
he has some congressional, I think he's
he has some,
like he just probably wasn't there.
Exactly.
Whatever,
yeah. And it was in her district there in Rochester.
Yeah.
So it was so exciting.
Yeah.
It was,
That's awesome.
We were all into it. So he knew he was going to get trashed. He didn't really talk about it much in his speech because, and actually it was interesting. When I was watching CNN, they kind of turned to their panel of, first of all, their panel is exclusively people that have been working in Democratic or Republican politics this whole time. So they only have establishment people on the panel.
Right.
So At one point, David Axelrod was the most reasonable person on the panel, and he normally is like a shill for Hillary without even thinking twice. And I was like, what is happening anymore, guys? But they asked whether any of the panelists thought that he would drop out. Like Anderson Cooper was like, so is this is when a normal candidate would drop out. What do you think? And Van Jones was like, A, no. B, this is not a normal candidate, and there's no way he drops out.
Yeah.
So this is the point where the sort of media narrative shifts. It started with Nevada, and it kind of is moving towards the kind of the narrative that we all expected them to eventually get to, which is that Hillary Clinton is the indestructible winner.
Right.
But just for our own sense of well-being, I want to point out that I still think that we are having a victory right now. And I'll tell you why.
Yeah.
Because her acceptance speech sounded like she had plagiarized it from Bernie Sanders.
Yes. Because well, and that's what my mom, I was watching this at the same time that my mom was, and we were Facebook chatting about it. And she was like, oh, this speech is really good, you know? And it was like, I just kept refuting everything that she was saying. Because she was talking about taking corporations. And I was like, oh, you just got $500,000 from Alice Walton this last week, we found out, you know? And like, all of the things that she kept saying, it's sort of like, these all sound great, but these are all things that we know you to have not at least been in favor of as recently as like months ago.
Yeah. No, or currently are not in favor of in your real life.
Exactly. Yeah.
But I think it is again and again proving that the primary process itself is working and is important. So, as I was sort of watching this and watching kind of like how this got covered, got covered as a kind of like pro Hillary Clinton event as down, it was. Right. It was a huge defeat.
They covered, but in their defense, they covered New Hampshire similarly.
Exactly. So, but I mean, it was sort of interesting. For me, it was like the moment that I was like, okay, like Bernie Sanders finally had a moment where like he is like in a race himself, and now we're like in a race.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. I think that everywhere that this campaign goes further proves to me that the left is winning because the left is becoming the constituency to absorb.
Well, and the thing that I think about him, and, you know, we're going to talk specifically in a little bit about Super Tuesday polls. He's going to do well in a lot of them. He's going to get blown out in some of them. But I was watching MSNBC yesterday, and Lawrence O'Donnell made a point that I was like, oh, that's true. He is going to do well enough, and he has enough money that he's going to be able to continue on.
Yeah.
And every race that Hillary Clinton has run in, including her blowout wins in the Senate, she has never gone up in a poll.
Yeah.
So we don't know what's, and you know, we don't know what's going on with her emails. We don't know what's going on. And I don't want to, like, I'm not trying to be a conspiracy theorist here, but like, does it look like he's going to win right this second? No. But is a week
enough time for him to look like
a literal eternity in podcasting?
It is because we only podcast once a week.
In politics.
Yeah.
In politics.
In this circumstance, it certainly is.
So there's no reason for him to drop out. He's going to win some states. He's going to maybe be close to winning a couple other states on Super Tuesday. He's going to get delegates in every state, even the ones that he's blown out in. Even after South Carolina, he's not desperately behind in delegate count.
I don't mind seeing him in a race either. You know, I think it's important that both of them be in a race. I think, you know, that there are issues that he won't talk about unless he's in a race as well that I want to hear him talk about.
Yeah.
That's, you know, this was a week where they competed actively over criminal justice reform.
Right.
I haven't heard anyone compete actively over criminal justice reform in a long time.
Yeah.
So this is all positive, everybody. Yeah. It's all good news.
Yeah.
I'm feeling great. This election is just killing it, you guys. Yeah,
it is.
Except for if you're following the Republican.
Okay. If you're not, get your life together.
And also, whatever kind of newspaper you're reading should be covering it at this point. It is entertainment. It is politics. It's the future. It's the past. Yeah. It's like everything. If you read only Mad Magazine, at this point, you should also be caught up on the Trump situation.
Totally.
Trump widened his lead yet again in Nevada.
Big blowout
victory.
Pretty much equaled Rubio and Cruz's total. You know, yeah. Rubio and Cruz spent most of this week, and we're going to talk about this in more detail in a little bit, but talking about how they would be winning if there was only one of them or if there were less right. candidates. And that didn't even really hold true in Nevada. And it's not going to hold true in a lot of places coming on Super Tuesday either.
No.
So that, you know, they're getting blown out so badly that the two of them collectively are not beating
Trump. No. Yeah. And there were some surprising trends. You know, there were some unreliable entrance polls that showed that he won Latino votes. It was only 8% of the right. GOP electorate.
He's been using that as a talking point. People have been disputing it all week.
You can't get an accurate sample size with only 8% of a caucus electorate
right.
doing anything.
Yeah.
Also, don't even be Latino voting in this in the primary at this moment. That's right. the wrong choice.
Yeah, you're doing it wrong.
He increased his vote share over what he's been winning in other primary states. And this is, we need to point out, Rubio spent part of his childhood
right.
in Nevada. This is like a hometown kind of
and
deal for
spent
Rubio.
Part of his previous years as a Mormon.
Exactly.
And there's a lot of them in Nevada.
Yeah. No, I mean, this is a sort of curious blowout for him because he really should have had some home state advantage. Donald Trump, we have to remind you, is from Queens. Nobody likes New Yorkers in the rest of the country.
Yeah.
And on top of that, being a blowhard from Queens is like just one step above being from New Jersey.
Right.
I mean, that's not a win.
Yeah.
So, it's mind-boggling to even watch this go down.
Yeah.
Turnout was massive. According to anecdotal reports, there were huge lines. There were places that ran out of ballots. There were a lot of reports of violations because the staff was undertrained right. because nobody expected this right. many people to show up.
There were staffers wearing Donald Trump Make America Great Again t-shirts.
Right.
I don't know if
that's
you saw
not,
this.
Yes,
all
yeah,
those.
I did yeah. see that. Uh-huh. This was something that I think was surprising to Cruz and Rubio because even though yeah. they have been seeing high turnout in all of these states, in 2012, only 7% of registered Republicans showed up to caucus. And so they had been really organizing early, hoping to catch all the sort of party loyalists that
right.
they actually expected to show up. And everyone else under the sun came.
Right.
So, and those people all said that they had made up their mind more than a week ago.
Yeah.
All of them, you know, a majority of those people were in for Trump. Like, it was not yeah. a good scene for those guys.
Yeah. Well, and this sort of went counter to how you would I mean, everything that he's doing is sort of like counter to convention. But, he didn't Cruz specifically had what he thought was a good ground game there. Rubio,
yes.
they claim sort of the same thing. Trump didn't
well, Rubio
really.
Claims
and
to
Trump,
know the state.
And it sort of ended up being one of the things that, you know, bit Trump in Iowa. But it didn't here.
Yeah,
he was able to sort of get this blowout win here without really doing a whole lot of
no.
much.
Literally, people were just super excited and showed up to the polls without him actually like showing up to them.
Right, he didn't go around Nevada shaking a bunch of hands.
He said blowhard nonsense on television, and they were like, "That sentence that's not grammatically correct makes sense to me," and then went to vote for him.
Yeah.
And so now Rubio and Cruz have sort of. They're sort of collectively working on this strategy. There was this poll that came out that said that 2/3 of Republican voters don't want to see a Trump nominee.
Yeah.
That
math is probably pretty close to right.
I'm sure that it's not wrong.
Right.
I'm also sure that it like all polls in this environment
yeah.
is changing rapidly and
yeah.
in unpredictable ways.
Yeah.
I'm also sure, however, that regardless of whether or not that math is right, one thing that's not right is that the fact that Rubio didn't beat Trump in this primary, that is not a sign that Ted Cruz is the stronger of the two of them.
No,
Ted Cruz
it's not.
in his concession speech, said that the results showed that the only campaign that has beaten Donald Trump and the only campaign that can beat Donald Trump is this campaign. He came in third.
Right.
So he was beaten not only by loser Rubio, but
yeah.
by Donald Trump as well.
Right. And
we're losing to win
yeah,
kind of
speech. He said something along the lines of, no candidate has ever won the party's nomination without winning one of the first three states. And he said,
right.
and we're the only other one. It was sort of like trying to push Rubio
yeah.
out here at this point. Like,
it's
but it's
getting
also
good,
like,
guys.
Has anyone ever won? I don't know whether
this
is the case.
But this is like pulling an arbitrary statistic
right,
out of thin air.
Has anyone ever won the party's nomination who has lost three of the first four states?
Right.
That's a question that I have. I don't know the history on that. But that would have been my follow-up question.
These
to
were
Ted
not
Cruz.
Statisticians
no.
who he was speaking to.
No.
Also, I mean, whatever the polls about what the GOP, voters as a whole want to see, the polls coming out of this showed that this was a heavily anti-establishment crowd. And that was what was driving it. 6 out of 10 said that they were angry about the way the government was functioning. Mm-hmm. And that is what is driving people to the polls for Trump. So Cruz is the symbol of the government not functioning himself. He is single-handedly making the government not function. Yeah. Rubio has very large ears and also looks like a child. And so he is a senator who is not helping the government function. Because even the one time he tried to, he got dinged for it so hard that he had to stop.
Yeah, Rubio's not winning because he tried.
Exactly. So, I mean, it's like these voters, first of all, don't seem to know what they want. But second of all, there's a reason that Cruz and Rubio are both damaged goods in this kind of year.
Right.
So, in any case, this has been an interesting result.
It has.
And we are going to see some exciting fallout, I think, on Super Tuesday. But we also saw some very excited fallout, at the debate this week.
Right.
So before we talk about that, we're going to talk a little bit about Trump's victory speech and some hilarious things he said before the debate.
Such a doozy. Cruz, this victory speech was amazing.
So there was a lot of, to lay the context, there was a lot of chatter on Twitter, in the media, about why no one in the GOP field seems to be attacking Trump. They have been giving him a free ride, basically.
Right.
They've been all fighting amongst each other to try and be the last person standing to eventually take him on.
Exactly. But they have not done anything.
They haven't touched him. Yeah. And so this week, Cruz was the first one to kind of become attack Cruz. But he attacked him with boring facts, such as that Trump changes his mind a lot and doesn't make a lot of sense.
Yeah.
To which, so he said, as part of his concession speech, part of the reason someone vacillates from position to position is that they're not starting from a core set of principles and beliefs. Huh. Now, his rigidity is what's keeping him from having any endorsements, so I don't know what his deal is.
I do think that he's probably right about Donald Trump here.
He's not wrong. But Trump replied in typical Trump fashion with, he's like a little baby compared to some of the people I have to deal with. He's like a little baby, soft, weak, little baby by comparison. Donald Trump. That's some, some hilarious Trumpisms in his actual victory speech. It was more slam poetry than rhetoric.
It was. Really. It totally was. Yes.
It was.
You should have. I don't know what. I was watching MSNBC cover this, and Rachel Maddow and Brian Williams were reading these quotes after the speech was over, and they were breaking during these. I mean, they could not get through one of these sentences without just. I mean, it was quite a sight because
we're going to try some ourselves.
They were attempting to do the news, but they couldn't.
We're going
to
try some ourselves, and we're a comedy podcast, so if we break,
that's fine.
All the better.
Yeah.
Okay. We weren't expected to win too much, and now we're winning the country, and soon the country is going to start winning.
That's right.
So we're going to be winning. Mm-hmm. That's great.
We won the evangelicals. We won with young. We won with old. We won with highly educated. We won with poorly educated. I love the poorly educated. That was the one that everyone kind of blew out about.
Uh-huh. They didn't comment on the fact that that sentence itself or that phrase itself was sort of like a Dr. Seuss book. He also predicted that he said it's going to be an amazing 2 months. We might not even need 2 months, to be honest, to cinch the nomination.
He might be right there.
Yeah, he might be right. Yeah. This was the week that everyone was like, holy fuck.
Oh, shit.
Holy fuck. He's going to roll. What do we do?
Yeah.
In any case, one more. Now we're going to get greedy for the United States. We're going to grab and grab and grab. We're going to bring in so much money and so much everything.
Everything.
We're going to have so much of everything.
We're going to have it all, guys. Why not vote for President Trump?
No, this sounds great.
Yeah.
I want everything.
Yeah.
I want everything and money.
Right.
Money and everything.
That's right.
I want to grab, grab, grab so that I can have all the money and everything that there is.
Yeah.
In any case, this set the stage for what was the world's Republican debate.
I mean, so many of these have been pretty spectacular.
Yeah, this one.
But this was really, because it was the three of them, front and center.
Pure schoolyard.
Ben Carson talking about God knows what, not hearing questions because he's not paying
John
attention.
John Kasich maybe
and John
there,
Kasich
maybe not.
Trying
Nobody
to be
knows.
Reasonable, which there's not a market for.
No. So, there's no constituency for that, John Kasich.
Yeah.
So in any case, before we dive in, I have some important notes. One of which is that the backdrop looked like a giant hot dog, and there was no way to unsee it, and it distracted me for a full hour from Marco Rubio's ears, leading me to
That's good.
Well, then, an hour in, I was like, holy fuck, his ears are big. And then I was like, oh my God, I forgot.
And then did you have both of those things in
your brain
at the
same time?
No,
it was too much to even think about. Yeah. I stopped listening at that point because I was so distracted, and then I kind of had like a mind, like a brain melt moment.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
In any case, this was the first time it was pure schoolyard fight, and it was the first time that I realized just how physically imposing Trump is in this context. Yeah. Rubio and Cruz are both younger, but they're also littler.
They're shorter.
And so he looked like a cartoon brute who was like, my dad described it as like one of those brutes that like holds his arm out and the like little person is like punching them but can't reach. Like that's what he looked like. He would hold his arm out to silence Rubio and he would shut up. And he even did it to Cruz, and Cruz is fucking scary. I would not hold my arm out to try to silence Cruz. I would try to hold a cross out with some garlic and try to silence Cruz. But he managed to take both of them on in literally the way a schoolyard bully does.
Yeah, exactly. But for the first time, people were getting some blows in that were perhaps
they're trying
landing.
To fight back.
They're trying. And you know, what I found so interesting about this is that I think for sure, without question, those two had a plan together before that debate.
I mean, they must have. They had
zingers worked up and about the same things. It was like they had shared Oppo research.
Yeah. No, I mean, it really was.
I think they absolutely had, because they came collectively ready to play like in a gang up sort of way that they couldn't have done had they not talked about it
beforehand. And they did not get into it with each other nearly as much as
not
usual.
Not much at all.
It was all about Trump.
No, because usually they go after each other.
Yeah,
they'll
they
go
hate
after
each other
on immigration.
They're like
brothers. They just generally don't like each other. Yeah. But yeah, it was pretty laser focused on Trump.
Solely on Trump.
Yeah.
So first of all, it's important to point out, this is a kind of a side note, but it's related, that after this all went down, Rubio has been on like an insult comedy tour of America.
Totally.
He was, this video of him on Friday surfaced where he's speaking to a crowd and he says, Trump has this little makeup thing, applying makeup around his mustache because he's had one of those sweat mustaches at the debate. Which is hilarious because Rubio is famous for his water issues and sweating issues.
And also Trump has been talking about Rubio's sweating issues.
Yeah, no, they're
all the
like
time.
Trading
They're not even talking about, instead of policy, they're talking about sweat. Who sweats more?
Yeah.
Like that's what the GOP primer has turned
like,
into,
Like, no, you
guys.
Sweat more than I do. No, you didn't see about his must. Did you see his sweat mustache? But did you see Rubio's forehead? Like
right.
That's what's going on here.
Uh-huh.
It's madness. But here's another point before we get into the insult comedy that defined the night. The last thing is that Trump is continuing to elude us policy-wise.
Yeah.
He is making no sense. He defended Planned Parenthood
while talking about
how he was going to defund it.
Defunding it, right.
But
exactly.
He said, while talking about his argument for defunding it, said, I'm totally against abortion having to do with Planned Parenthood, but millions and millions of women, cervical cancer, breast cancer, are helped by Planned Parenthood. So you can say whatever you want, but they have millions of women going through Planned Parenthood that are helped greatly. What? Also, breast cancer
defund
and cervical
Planned
cancer
Parenthood.
Helped by Planned Parenthood. He also made some fairly progressive healthcare proposals, once again, that are proposals that would actually bring down costs. I mean, they would have to be in conjunction with Obamacare instead of Obamacare.
Right.
But, I mean, these are things that in this crowd, he might as well have suggested that we all give 90% of our income to the government and, like, lay down and let them roll us over. I mean, compared to what everyone else was saying on that stage. And he was the only one. This is what's so interesting about this debate, is he's the only one, despite him not making any sense and saying random nonsense, he's the only one that's made any healthcare policy proposals at all.
Well, that's true.
And they don't fit into his platform at all. So
oftentimes
it doesn't seem like he knows what he's talking about. But the rest of them kept being like, but what's your plan? And I kept being like, excuse me.
What's your plan? Right?
Ted Cruz, who literally
shut down the government
to try to stop us from
funding
having healthcare, but has no plan.
Yeah.
Like, don't tell Donald Trump that he's the only one with even half of a plan.
Right.
You guys, that's the one plan he has.
Right.
His other plan is to build a wall and make Mexico pay for it.
Yeah.
That's not a plan.
Yeah.
This is more of a plan than what you have.
He reiterated his healthcare plans by saying there would be so many different plans and adding it would be many, many different plans.
Yeah.
So I don't know what those are, but that is, having many different plans is many more plans than either of those two are offering us.
So true. He also repeatedly said that the federal government should get rid of the state lines on the insurance market, which is a thing that would bring down costs for everyone because increasing the risk pool brings down costs.
That's,
that's how insurance works. That might be the one business fact he actually understands. And he also said, and in this crowd again, this is, and Ted Cruz got pissed when he said this, that he doesn't want to see people dying in the streets.
Well,
Ted Cruz is not having that.
Remember in the 2012
he will not
debates
let
when
you stop dead people from dying in the streets.
Remember in the 2012
when
debates
they
where they
cheered for people dying
people
in the
dying
streets?
In the streets?
Yeah. No. Yeah. He went on record as saying he doesn't want people to die in the streets. And Ted Cruz
Donald
was
Trump
not
is
happy.
Really a hero of the people.
So true. But I mean, that's been interesting to watch. Because in the midst of all of this, he is the only one who made any policy proposals that I can remember from this debate.
But they were going after each other on like the most ridiculous things. I mean, they were talking about, you know, Trump hiring, what were they, like, Polish workers or something. They talked about Trump's taxes have become a big thing this week because they're talking about that. I mean, they're talking about...
So there were, like, insult comedy moments.
Yeah.
The first one was about immigration. And it started because Trump got asked about his immigration policies. He delivered an answer that was vague and made no sense. And then Rubio, in response to an answer that had no content, said that he, like, took another left turn and went after Trump for hiring, quote, more than 1,000 illegal immigrants and paying $1 million in a suit related to him hiring illegal immigrants. He said, "You're the only person on the stage that's ever been fined for hiring people to work for your projects illegally." Trump replied, "He's the only person on the stage who's hired anyone at all." Fair point. So there was that insult comedy, which started with a left turn, took another left turn, ended up in Siberia.
Yeah.
Then there was the insult comedy of Ted Cruz having no friends, where Trump said, "I get along with everybody. You get along with nobody. You don't have one Republican senator that you work with every day in your life. These are minor details, but you don't have one senator backing you. You should be ashamed of yourself." And Cruz said, "You know, I actually think Donald's right. He's promising that if he's elected, he will go and cut deals with Washington. And he's right. He's given hundreds of thousands of dollars to Democrats."
Yeah.
So that was, there was like the Ted Cruz has no friends and Donald Trump is a Democrat.
Yep.
There was a lot of talk about Trump University, which is my favorite thing that has happened in America ever. Trump University, first of all, do not go to a school called Trump University.
No. It doesn't exist anymore, so you can't.
You can't, because there was a fraud case going forward this summer about it.
Right.
But Trump University was a fake university where you would go and pay a lot of money to get your picture taken with Donald Trump, basically, and get a fake degree from non-accredited Trump University.
Yeah.
Both Rubio and Cruz, clearly they had discussed this, went after him about it. Rubio just in saying, you know, Trump was going on about his deal-making skills, and Rubio said, "You don't know anything about trade because you're a lousy businessman. I don't know anything about bankrupting companies. I also don't know anything about starting a fake university." And then Cruz called him out and said that he'd be in court in July over the whole thing, which would be a media disaster, which he's not wrong.
No, he's not.
But Trump University sounds like Gingrich Productions to me. It's like a fake entity that has fallen apart before we even got a chance as a nation to know it.
Yeah.
That is like... Like, can I start Nordstrom University? Is that, like, are we doing that now? Like, it seems like Nordstrom University would be a more serious academic institution than Trump University.
Would be. Yes.
There was insult comedy part four, where Rubio said that if Donald Trump hadn't inherited all that money, he'd be selling watches in Manhattan right now.
So good.
There was the schoolyard insult comedy, where Rubio said, now he's repeating himself of Trump's policy, you know, healthcare policy. Yeah. And Trump goes, "No, I'm not. No, I don't repeat myself. I don't repeat myself. Guys, be better than this."
I know. Well, and then...
Don't have puns. And then, the puns are where I draw
And then one. Rubio, at one point, said something like, yes, you just say the five same things over and over. He was like...
He tried to make Trump like, the
we're
robot.
Winning. I'm winning in the polls. Build a wall. And, like, started, like, listing off, you know, Trump's talking points. Like,
which,
those are the
coming
only
from
things
him, just reminded me that nobody is thinking anywhere. Like, it didn't help me forget that Marco Rubio doesn't remember things and just says the same shit all the time in the exact same inflection. It just reminded me that everyone's doing it.
Yeah.
And that wasn't a great thing to remember. There was the part where Rubio's had the zinger of the Middle East isn't a real estate deal. Because Donald Trump was going on about how he could solve the Middle East because of his deal-making skills. And they were like, not the same thing. And he was like, but Israel loves me. But he also has been less pro-Israel than the rest of them, which is also interesting.
He took some flack just this week or the last week when saying that he was going to be, you know, an honest broker
in that.
And everybody was like, everybody on the right anyway, was like, well, you can't be an honest broker with those two. It's
you got to be Israel.
And you, right, yeah.
Yeah, but that's a really interesting thing, too, for the New Yorker in the race to have done.
That's true.
Donald Trump lives and breathes in a city that does not accept that Israel is not the only country worth thinking about. Yeah. I mean, like, that is a sort of political mentality that exists in New York that is hawkish in a way that that New Yorkers are not about anything else.
Yeah.
So that's interesting to me that the only New Yorker in the race, he's probably the most informed about it, actually, of all of them, because he's probably actually been thinking about this his whole life, as opposed to being a Cuban guy who was like, wait, we love Israel, because that's what they told me to say.
He was also the only one on the stage who doesn't think that the Israeli people being in charge of their own nation is going to, you know, bring Jesus back to earth.
I had not thought of that, but you are right. He doesn't believe anything except that he's going to win and that money is great and he's going to bring everything.
He's pretends that he's a Christian, but he doesn't. He's not. He doesn't believe in the Israel end time nonsense that the two people on both sides of him do, and Ben Carson, wherever he was standing.
Right. Him and his grain silos or his grain storage facilities in the pyramids believe in. Yeah, no, I mean, it's. I had not thought of that angle, but you are not wrong.
Yes.
That is a point that I wish that I had known to think of myself.
Oh, boy.
Anyway,
Ben
you might
Carson.
Have been wondering where Ben Carson was this whole time.
He had to ask
to be attacked.
Right. Well, and he also had to ask the moderators to repeat questions a couple times.
Yeah.
Where he had to say, I didn't hear the first part of the question. I truly think that he is not paying attention.
I don't. Well, he wasn't doing anything. So, I mean, I would have lost interest. I would have missed the beginning of the questions if I'd just been standing there the whole time.
But he did have one of the best quotes of the night.
Yeah, he had one of the best quotes of the night. The one real question that he got was that he was asked to describe his criteria for a Supreme Court nominee. And he said he would look at what the person's life has been, what they've done in the past, what kind of judgments they've made, what kind of associations they have. This will tell you a lot more than an interview will tell you. The fruit salad of their life is what I'll look at. Twitter, predictably, got on that quick, including us. I think I tweeted something about a honeydew melon being in my fruit salad. And that was why things were going so shitty. I don't know. But that was the most tweeted moment of the night, for sure.
Yeah.
The other debate fallout is the discussion on Trump's taxes.
Right. We've been really getting into this week. Yeah. People have been weighing in. Mitt Romney weighed in on this. Everybody on the trail was talking about why because he won't release his tax returns. Right. He said either at the debate or
he said at the debate repeatedly that it was because he's in the middle of an audit,
right,
and he will release them as soon as the audit is over.
Right.
So Mitt
the
Romney
IRS has already said that is not the case.
Right.
If you're being audited, then that's basically a request for you to release your taxes,
right,
by the
way. He kept saying that, and I kept being like, maybe I don't understand taxes.
You do.
But I feel like an audit doesn't prevent you from releasing your tax returns.
It
it's just a thing that can happen where your tax returns are released to someone else, too.
Yeah.
Because Mitt Romney called on Wednesday for everyone to release their tax returns. Yeah. Rubio was another one.
Which is rich coming from him, who had to.
I know.
He had to really be
dragged
convinced.
Out of the tax return closet.
Yeah.
Rubio has been asked repeatedly to do this because he's had some financial shady dealings
and
in the past.
He did, though, didn't he?
He did not.
Oh, he not
said
for this last year.
Going,
he's released them as part of, I think, what he has to.
Right, like, he's made Senate financial disclosures.
Exactly,
but he has not. He said he would in the summer release them, and he has not done that release. So he claimed he would do it this week. He, at the debate, said that he would do it.
Yeah.
Today, basically.
Yeah,
I haven't seen them.
Yeah.
I mean, not that he was sending them to me, but.
Right. Did he fax them to you?
He faxed them to me. Yeah. My fax machine is in good working order, Hillary Clinton. Yeah. And then Cruz also said that he would release them this week.
Yeah.
But Mitt Romney also said that he thinks that there's something there, and that's why Trump doesn't want to do it. He said either he's not anywhere near as wealthy as he says he is, or he hasn't been paying the kind of taxes we'd expect him to pay, or perhaps he hasn't been giving money to the vets or to the disabled like he's been telling us he's been doing.
Or people have questioned whether maybe he's been giving to Democrats, even as recently as this last year.
I'm sure he has. He's been giving to everyone.
This sort of, he should get them out, because
this goes
back to your power vacuum or your information vacuum.
Yeah, information vacuums are a dangerous thing.
Until we know why he hasn't done it, then we're just going to hear every conspiracy theory about why he hasn't done
it.
And they're all pretty bad. None of these look good for him.
By the way, Mitt Romney knowing all of these to be possibilities makes me know for a fact that he also has done all of these things. So he just made every rich person guilty in my mind.
Totally.
By saying that.
Yeah.
So the desperate mission to bring down Trump has reached a fever pitch among the Republicans. This was the week where they were like, holy fuck.
Because Nevada was a blowout. He's won three blowouts in a row now. So he's 3 for 4. They've been 3 in a row.
And
he's
coming up on big margins.
Big margins. He's coming up on Super Tuesday. We're going to get to those polls. There's a real chance that he wins almost all of them.
Yeah,
not all of them.
No,
I mean,
that is real.
Yeah. And everybody is just sort of trying to figure out when and how they're going to stop
party
them.
Party strategists
and nobody really
are,
has a real great handle
are really
on it.
Really racking their brains trying to think of something. The Times had a big story about it this week that begins with, the party has been gripped by a nearly incapacitating leadership vacuum and a paralytic sense of indecision and despair.
Yeah.
Like, basically, everyone is running in full tilt panic and has no idea what they're doing.
Yeah.
Last fall, Alex Castellanos and Gail, is it her name Glitchko?
I don't know.
I cannot say her name.
Yeah.
I have read her name many times and thought, I hope I never have to say that out loud. Well, and here we are. I just tried. I know. Glitcho. They are, Republican strategists and journalists in the case of Alex Castellanos. But they are sort of like involved with the party leadership.
Yeah.
They released this plan or released a plan to donors saying that they were going to create a super PAC that would take down Trump called Project Us. or Project US, whatever you want to call it. They did not find any donors for that, and no sort of group has come to make the sustained Trump effort, you know, a thing. And so instead, everyone is just having a ton of meetings, panicking to themselves about what to do.
Yeah.
So Karl Rove was at a meeting this week where he was like, I think we still have a shot, guys. And everyone was like, do
but
we?
Who trusts him to do anything, though, either?
Exactly.
After 2012.
After 2012. He's not the answer.
Failure for him. He can't fix it.
No, exactly. And I mean, he didn't understand what was happening in 2012, so he certainly doesn't know what's happening in a fully populist year.
No.
2012 was only 50% populist. This year is out of Karl Rove's line
he
of...
Yeah, he can't grasp what's happening.
Yeah, it's not... But also campaigns have started drafting their own plans with brokered conventions. We've talked a little bit about that on the podcast. And there's been some wishful thinking that... because delegates are only bound for the first round. There's been some talk about how we can get four second votes and, you know, that sort of thing. So they're hoping that they can get Trump out because of by doing multiple rounds of balloting.
Right. What's dangerous about that, though, and I was talking to a Republican friend of mine this week, is that, and he's very anti-Trump as well.
Yeah, well, I mean,
but
I would be.
If these three guys go to the convention, nobody has enough to secure the nomination, but Trump is far enough ahead that it's substantial, and he loses somehow on a second ballot,
that's
giant,
the end of the party.
I mean, somebody's going to detonate the convention, basically.
No,
I mean...
This, letting it get this out of control and then trying to broker the convention after the fact is not an option.
No, uh-uh.
Once you have opened up the party selection process to voters, you can't rescind that offer again. Mm-hmm. That is not... And these voters especially will not... They're crazy.
Yeah.
They will not take that.
No.
But they will also do something unpredictable in the course of not taking it. Also, people are really angry at Kasich in D.C., because Casey, they're kind of like, why is he still in the race?
Right.
Why he's sort of dragging this sort of like, you know, million person establishment contingent farther than it needs to go. He's not really placing in these states.
Right.
His plan is to win Ohio and then see if he can't sort of like pull the momentum back towards him.
Now, what I have heard about that actually is sort of a little more conspiracy.
Perfect. I love it. Have you been hearing it at the Drudge Report?
Probably so. No, actually not.
Oh,
but people, there are rumblings that the reason that he is staying in is, yes, to win Ohio, but not because he thinks that really does anything for him. But that's a huge delegate grab that Trump doesn't get.
Oh, interesting. So he's, right, because if he leaves, then Trump will win Ohio.
Correct. And he's already actually winning.
Right.
I mean, he's ahead in the polls.
He's going to win Ohio, I think.
Yeah, he is.
Pretty easily. That's interesting that they've had to just go on a defensive strategy.
Yeah.
I mean,
that's part
of the brokered convention plan.
Yes.
So in any case, maybe they're just then releasing to the media that they're angry to make it seem like they have a plan, when in fact their plan is just to try to keep delegates away from Trump instead of winning something themselves.
I know. Well, and what's interesting is I think that, you know, we've been talking about whether Cruz and, or, you know, if Cruz or Rubio, if one of them gets out, I don't, it's not that easy either.
No.
And Trump himself has said this, and I think that he's actually right about this. And specifically, I think in the case of Cruz, probably more so than in the case of Rubio. But I think a lot of Cruz people go to Trump.
Oh, I agree. Absolutely.
Maybe less of
Cruz's
Rubio's people.
Cruz's brand of crazy is anti-establishment as Trump.
It doesn't help Rubio as much as he thinks it does for Cruz to drop out.
No. What evangelical voters are already flocking to Trump.
Yeah.
That's where the other half of the evangelical voters are going.
Yeah.
You know, Cruz has a certain number of them.
Yeah.
Carson once did and now has nobody at all.
Yeah.
But the natural process by which evangelical voters make a second choice is that they go to another crazy candidate. They are not going to be like, well, we had our fun and now we're going to go vote for this establishment that we have been supporting a man who's trying to detonate it from the inside this whole time.
Yeah.
Like that just doesn't, that doesn't make any sense.
No, it doesn't make sense.
And also the establishment wing of the party is really fractured. Like Rubio and Bush aren't speaking anymore. They used to be BFFs.
I know.
Nobody can get them back together. Romney might endorse Rubio. I'm sure that will solve everything. But I mean, they're trying to sort of grab figures where they can to endorse Rubio because...
Well, there was even talk that Romney Wright might get into the race.
I know.
That was things that people were talking about this week.
It's not a good sign when your failed candidate, the wave of your failed candidate pretending to get into the race continues to come back month after month.
Yeah.
That rumor should have been squelched.
Right.
And
do we think that Mitt Romney is the person to take on Donald Trump?
Oh,
I mean, come
exactly.
on.
Exactly. I mean, if Bush couldn't take on Donald Trump, another son of the aristocracy is not the answer.
No, he doesn't know how to deal with him.
No, he's never...
He's less equipped, I would say, probably equipped, than George, Jeb Bush
exactly.
was.
Exactly. He's less equipped than almost anyone. The man cannot sit in a stool naturally.
No.
He's the most awkward person on earth.
Yeah.
Jeb Bush and Mitt Romney, though, are cut from the same kind of cloth where they were raised and bred to be aristocrats.
Yeah.
So they exist in this rarefied world of of the very wealthy. Yeah.
If you think Donald Trump has been stealing these people's lunch money, you haven't seen a damn thing until Mitt Romney decides to jump into the race.
Exactly.
Right? Like, I mean, easy pickings.
That's easy pickings.
Yeah.
And this is, they need someone who can get scrappy.
Yeah.
Donald Trump is scrappy. And people are responding to it. They're loving it.
Yeah.
None of these people are equipped to deal with someone like him. None of them have had to. He's the kind of person that they don't associate themselves with as rich people, even though he is also rich.
Yeah.
In any case, this week, as a result of all of this, there were some Looney Tunes endorsements. So first of all, last week there was a meeting of Republican governors where Paul LePage from Maine gets up and tries to get the room to come together with him in a plan to defeat Trump, where they're going to write a letter and stomp this out.
That'll do it.
Yes, nothing like a letter to really. But, you know, they're trying. He was angry. He thought that the Trump's nomination would deeply wound the Republican Party. That's how the Times phrased it. He wanted to get them together and have a plan.
Similar to what he's doing right now.
Exactly. Then his guy from the race, Chris Christie,
he had endorses
Trump.
He had, and Paula Page had endorsed Chris Christie.
Paula Page had already endorsed Chris Christie, and Christie surprise attacks this week in the most epic moment of political comedy that's ever happened in the world and endorsed Donald Trump.
And it really can't be overstated how big of a deal that is. I mean, Chris Christie,
cannot be.
He was in the race.
Right.
He was running against Donald Trump. He is a sitting governor. He is the head of the Republican Governors Association. So he's basically the highest ranking sitting governor.
High profile establishment person to endorse Donald Trump.
Yeah.
And it set off a fucking deluge.
Yes, it did.
This was the day after Nevada.
Well, and what was so interesting about this is that Trump really, really tried to get him.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't want to overstate, you know, Trump's, whether he's a genius or not. I don't think he's a genius.
No.
But I think that he's a snake, and I think that he's doing things smarter than he's getting credit for.
Yeah.
He's not just like a bloviating asshole. Right. That's a big part of it. Don't get me wrong.
Absolutely.
That's most of it.
There are things about strategy that he is understanding that he's not getting credit for.
Correct.
As he bloviates
in public.
And this
is one of them. Apparently, there were a lot of reports that he has been trying to get this ever since Christie dropped out. Supposedly Marco Rubio left him a voicemail.
And in it, he said that Christie had a bright future in public office. And Christie was like, fuck that guy. Because Christie's way older than him and has way more experience in public office.
And he already hates him anyway.
Right. And then it was like the next day that he came out for Trump.
And what's, you know, Trump is
And Christie's
smart
people basically
enough.
Said that this was motivated by the fact that he hates Rubio so much.
Yeah.
Christie.
Well, and Trump is smart enough to know that the person who probably stands best to maybe take him down, if anyone does, is Marco Rubio at this point.
Yeah.
And the person who has already ruined Marco Rubio once is Chris Christie.
Mm-hmm.
So he basically went out and got himself a Rubio killer.
Yeah.
Which is like, I mean, that's not a move of an idiot.
No. It's the move of an idiot to do the endorsement.
Well, yes.
But I mean, one of the reasons it can't be overstated how epic this is because this is the first moment that Donald Trump has some establishment credibility on his
team. Well, some other dominoes started to fall.
And one of them is that Monsieur Paul LePage of Maine, who just a week ago was announcing to the Governors Association that they had to come up with a plan to stop Trump, endorsed Trump this week.
That's right.
It sort of sums up how everything's going for the GOP at the moment.
Yeah.
They don't know what to do. Up is down, left is right, the sky is red. Nothing is making any sense for them. He said, I'll be very honest, I originally said I'd like it to be a governor, but unfortunately the American people are not going to get, I'm going for a governor this year, so I'm going to endorse Donald Trump.
There you go.
Why not?
That's it.
This is probably a cue from Rubio, but he also said, I was Donald Trump before Donald Trump became popular, so I think I should support him since we're cut from the same cloth.
Yeah.
That's a scary thought. Also, not untrue.
Not untrue. No.
I mean, Paula Page, as you recall, is a crazy person.
Right.
So
we've brought you a lot of recent stories about Paula Page and his insanity.
We sure have.
Yeah.
Here's some other people that suddenly came out of the woodwork. It's like there's a homing mechanism that went into effect for crazy people.
Yeah, totally.
Because everyone else that followed was a batshit insane person.
Yeah.
The world over, literally.
Yeah.
I mean, so Jan Brewer comes out of the woodwork, former Arizona governor. She said, "For years, I pleaded with the federal government to do their job and secure our border," because she's, as you know, a border nut. Mm-hmm. "Today, we can elect a president who can do just that, Donald J. Trump. Mr. Trump will secure our borders, defend our workers, and protect our sovereignty. Mr. Trump will stand for our law enforcement, our police, and our immigration officers. Mr. Trump will actually enforce the rule of law."
Mm-hmm.
She stopped short of saying, "And he will build a wall and make Mexico pay for it."
Right.
So in any case, that was a surprise. Yeah. Then Jean-Marie Le Pen, the French Nazi, comes out of the woodwork. He's, you know, he's the head of the National Front Party. He led the far right party
for decades. I mean, he's in his 80s.
He's like a major, he's sort of the Donald Trump of your in France.
And his daughter is the Donald Trump of now.
The Le Pen that we talk about in the present tense is his daughter.
Yes.
He is the Le Pen of the past. The Le Pens are fucking nutcases.
That's right.
And he tweeted this week in French, "If I were an American, I'd vote Donald Trump, but God bless him." I was going to try to say that in French, and then I was like, well,
I was hoping that you would. That's why I put it on.
Si j'étais américain, je voterais Donald Trump.
Yeah.
In any case, so that was a surprise. Also, getting a French endorsement seems like a very curious thing for a Donald Trump campaign.
I agree.
But everything is making, I mean, things are happening that I couldn't possibly predict, no. So I don't even want to guess as to what that means.
Yeah.
I would have made a French joke, but it doesn't even make sense to try.
No.
Here's another person who endorsed Donald Trump. David Duke.
Who Trump is refusing to denounce, by the way.
Yeah. No, he's been asked at least three times this week on media to denounce him. He said it would be very unfair to disavow Duke's endorsement without knowing what he stands for, which is hilarious.
Right.
Because Twitter discovered an article
Grand Wizard of the KKK.
2000 in which he disavows Duke. Twitter has an article that talks about Donald Trump disavowing David Duke in the year 2000.
Yeah.
He finally belatedly posted a clip of him disavowing Duke's endorsement during a press conference. Christie is like wandering in the background. It's a very funny clip. And in any case, these are all players coming together that I would have never guessed, you know, in a fashion that I would have never guessed, in a situation that I could have never predicted. I mean, everything is happening, you guys. Yeah. Everything's happening. And then today, Jeff Sessions fell into line.
Yeah.
This is notable because he is the first person in the Senate to endorse Donald Trump.
Yep. He's from Alabama, which is voting on Tuesday, mm-hmm. so that's another big deal. And what's so interesting, like, what these endorsements, we have talked a lot about how they don't do anything. Marco Rubio can roll out all the endorsements that he wants.
They don't do anything for the establishment candidates.
Because it plays right into Donald Trump's hand to say, yes, of course, these are the establishment people. It's the same thing when Hillary Clinton rolls out all of
senators. Everyone fucking endorsed Hillary Clinton because they've worked with her in the Senate.
Yeah, but it's different for Trump, David Duke aside, because it gives him credibility.
Yeah.
Because he's running as the anti-establishment candidate. And once you're running as that candidate and you can get a sitting senator and sitting governors and people you were running against not but 2 weeks ago to endorse you, then
you're leading a movement.
Yeah, exactly. It helps you more than it helps any of your other opponents. So you're sort of like in a great spot because
because not having endorsements doesn't hurt.
Right.
But having the endorsements can only help.
It can only help. Exactly.
This week has been the week that Donald Trump became a sort of behemoth.
You know,
he's been a behemoth, but we've been, you know, we have been thinking he's the joke this whole time because he is a joke, like as a human being.
Right.
But this is the week that politically it suddenly became clear that there might not be a way to stop him from becoming the nominee.
Right.
They're like that. And if they do attempt to create a way, it might bring them down, not him.
Right.
I mean, bonkers town.
Yeah.
In any case, speaking of endorsements.
This one was
amazing
and huge.
We had an exciting one today. Bernie Sanders got an endorsement from a now former DNC member.
That's right.
Tulsi Gabbard resigned her post at the DNC today and endorsed him.
And we have talked about her before because she was one of the people who was really against, she was the one who was speaking out when there was all the drama initially when they unveiled the debate plans.
Schedule.
Because there was her and there were a few other people.
She called out Debbie Wasserman Schultz for unilaterally making the decision without consulting them.
Right, exactly. And
she's sort of vice chair on the DNC.
And she threatened doing this months ago.
Yeah.
And finally now she has.
Yeah.
And she was really eloquent about it too. But
I mean,
she
did. She's an ex-veteran.
Right, exactly.
I mean, she she is, I think if I were in her position too, this was a really smart move for her, not just because it's a smart move for anyone to endorse Bernie Sanders, but because she is in a position to sort of be the new bench of the Democratic Party. Yes. She is on the wave that is the future of the Democratic Party. This cements her position as the future of the party.
Right, exactly.
Because even if Bernie Sanders doesn't become the nominee, she has cemented her position with the wave of voters that is this block of voters that's about to become the biggest block of voters.
Yeah.
And as somebody who can not only work within the establishment because she's been on the DNC committee, she's been within the DNC, but also represents this wave.
I didn't know her until we started talking about the debate schedule.
Right.
And I can tell you, I saw at least 20 people on my Facebook who are my age, who I'm sure didn't know who she was
until she's a random congressperson
12 hours ago, sharing this speech, just really spiraling out of control about it. So and that's just me personally. She is now a hero moving forward. And you're right, she's got the pedigree. She's standing for Sanders, so she's obviously
she's
progressive.
She's a veteran.
She's a woman.
I think she's the first Hindu.
I think you're
member
right.
of Congress or something like that. She's got the pedigree.
So I think look out for her.
She's coming. Yeah. this is the moment, I think, and this is something that, you know, we've talked about a little before, but one of the things that this contested primary allows the Democrats to do is really generate a bench.
Yeah.
You know, the reason we have two oldsters running right now in the primary is because we haven't cultivated any new talent.
Right.
You know, we have maybe the Castro brothers, but like nobody even really knows what they're up to. Only one of them is a mayor and one of them is in an appointed position.
And this goes back to, you know, a piece that we're going to be putting on our
blog
this week.
Yeah, this goes back to the Clinton strategy. The Clinton strategy of yore. They did not help us create a bench like we needed to.
Well,
they found
also,
one guy,
right.
There was no legacy from him.
And it goes to the abandonment of the 50-state strategy that we had too, where
absolutely.
We really sort of we stopped cultivating young talent in places where we felt like it wasn't worth it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. No. So this is really exciting to see because it's one of the reasons that I was so sort of optimistic at the top of this podcast in the face of a crushing loss in South Carolina.
Right.
Because I feel like this Bernie Sanders campaign is doing exactly what it is supposed to do.
Yeah.
This is exactly what his campaign is supposed to do. It's supposed to create exciting young candidates and future party stars. It's supposed to move the party platform to the left in the process of doing that. It's supposed to call into question an order that was not serving us well. It is doing all of those things, and it's doing them really quickly.
Yeah.
And I mean, just in the last few months, we are seeing so many new stars of the Democratic Party emerge.
Yeah.
New York Magazine had like a little profile on a bunch of people who are going to be big names coming up. And we're seeing, you know, there's some people that are sort of like starting to make the rounds in local elections that I think are going to be the people that kind of come in the next wave of like Liz Warrens and people like that. Like, I think Zephyr Teachout is going to be our next Liz Warren. I think that Tulsi Gabbard is going to be someone that we start talking about as a contender for either like a Senate seat or something like that, or something more ambitious, like being on our bench for a potential presidential run. Like, these are people that we're going to start hearing about moving forward. And so
agreed.
That is exciting. And with that said, Super Tuesday is going to be a crushing loss for all of us. I recommend staying indoors and not talking to anyone.
It's not going to be that. It might not be that bad.
Well, also, I mean, I can't be taken off my high.
No, I know.
I've had moments. I've been on a roller coaster, as you know, because I sometimes text Brent and I'm like, I think that I've fallen apart. I think I've lost it.
Yeah.
But I feel like as a whole, when I really think about it in terms of the long game that I always claim I'm playing, I could not be more optimistic about what's happening here.
Yeah.
And we are going to see a lot of Southern states vote for Hillary Clinton.
That's right.
On Super Tuesday.
Yeah.
We can be mentally prepared for that because we know that that's going to happen.
That's going to happen.
We are going to see some other states not vote for Hillary Clinton
that's
on
right.
Super Tuesday. And we're going to see at the end of Super Tuesday a campaign that still has Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton running against each other.
Well, and you want to know what I mean, depending on how it goes, and it annoyed me when she was using this logic a lot in 2008, so I sort of hesitate to request that Bernie Sanders start using it. But the places that she is going to win on Super Tuesday are the places that we are not going to win.
Yeah.
In the general.
No, I mean,
the places that he is going to win or be almost winning are the places that we actually have a chance at. And states that he has won already. New Hampshire is always a battleground state. Minnesota is always close. He's potentially going to win the caucus there.
Yeah, we're looking
Colorado
at Colorado.
Is always close. he's banking on a potential win there. Now, obviously, we don't know how these are going to go. There's not recent polls for some of these, especially some of the caucus states. But, you know,
the trend
Massachusetts, the Democrats are going to win that.
Blue states are going Sanders. Democrats are in favor of Sanders.
Correct.
People who are sort of in the middle have always been in the middle. And they either are not really showing up in high numbers, so only party loyalists are showing up. I mean, South Carolina had very embarrassingly low turnout.
Yeah.
And a lot of people were talking about how they sort of connect that to Clinton.
Yeah.
That, you know, this was a state that was impossible for Bernie to win, so he didn't go in do the turn out the vote efforts the way that he could have. But also, Hillary Clinton doesn't drive turnout.
Right. Well, and also South Carolina, we just need to be clear about South Carolina, has something like an almost 3-to-1 margin of registered Republicans to Democrats.
Yeah, exactly. And so South Carolina is not a state that Democrats then win with any candidate.
Correct. No, it doesn't matter.
So it is a state. It is important that the Democrats there are a part of our selection process because we believe in democracy, guys.
That's right.
And if they want to vote for Hillary Clinton, that is their right. And
that's right.
They should. But that is not when we look at what states going forward are going to become important parts of the Bernie Sanders story.
Right.
You're going to see a trend of blue states not voting for Hillary
Clinton. Right, or purple states.
Or purple states.
Which are more important
than blue states. Right. Blue states are going to vote for whoever.
Yeah, because Colorado's purple. Minnesota can be purple.
Exactly. But
Iowa is purple.
Here's the other thing.
A tie there.
Texas is going to go for Hillary Clinton. But New York and California are still in play.
Totally.
And they're not until June. Have huge delegates.
Which is another reason why he obviously
not gonna leave.
Saying that he's...
But he's not going to leave before California comes up.
Well, and he has the money, too. That's the other thing that I heard somebody talking about the other day. So a lot of times when a candidate gets to this point and they're facing some potentially crushing losses is that... And we saw this a lot with the GOP candidates. They didn't have a damn dime to their name left.
Right.
He's got a crap load of money.
Yeah.
He's probably going to be able to continue raising it even if he loses. I mean, the people who are giving to... I'll give him more money tomorrow. I'll give him... If he loses all 13 states...
Still going to give him more money.
On Tuesday, on Wednesday morning, he's going to send me an email asking me for money and I'm probably going to give it to him.
Yeah, yeah.
So...
He's played that game with me many times and won.
Yeah, exactly. So we're not going to belabor the polls a bunch.
No.
We'll just go through them really quickly because we'll tell you which states are voting and who's way ahead now. But we're just going to rifle through them. Alabama... Clinton, we're using the average from Real Clear Politics.
Right, and some of these places haven't been polled that recently, so they may not be accurate. Yeah. We don't know. But here's
Alabama,
the most recent
poll. Clinton up an average of 28 points. Arkansas, same. Colorado, there's no recent polls here. Sanders is spending a lot of time there. It's a caucus. People seem to think that maybe
also fairly libertarian-y in the mold of New Hampshire.
This is one of the states that he has been openly talking about, thinking that
he
can maybe win. Georgia, Clinton up by all of the points, basically, an average of 37, so she could
Sanders
win
isn't
going to
win Georgia. Let's move on.
Exactly. The big thing that everyone is pointing to is Massachusetts.
Yes.
Because this is the second biggest
delegate grab
after Texas in the whole lot on Tuesday. It's desperately close.
Very. There. It's like within 1%.
Within 1%, the averages, yes. There are polls with both of them ahead by a couple percentages, depending on which you look at. Hillary Clinton has added a stop on the campaign on Monday, which is she just added this weekend. I think that he thinks he probably has to have this because it's a big one. And it's one that he can win. The demographics there are good for him.
Yes.
It's a big progressive state.
A lot of colleges.
A lot of colleges. So they are both making a huge play for that. If he can win that, that is good for him. If she wins that,
that's bad for him.
That's bad for him. Yeah. So that's like, if you're... Oh, God. I just got so excited. I knocked the mic. Yeah, that was probably loud. I apologize. If you're looking for the result... If you only care about one result, these 11 or 12 or 13, however many
that's
it is,
the
states,
one to follow.
Follow what's going on in Massachusetts on Tuesday.
That's
going to
be the only race in the Democratic side that is worth following.
Right.
The rest of them are already done, basically.
Yeah.
But Minnesota is another state that Sanders thinks, you know, Minnesota has a progressive streak and always has. Paul Wellstone was from Minnesota.
That's right.
My cousin Tina's from Minnesota.
It's a caucus. So
it's a caucus.
You know, gets the activists out. Usually.
Exactly. So that's a state that he's looking like he could win. It's getting closer in Oklahoma.
That's right.
So that's another state. That's a, I don't understand who's in Oklahoma particularly, but that's a state Sanders is looking at potentially trying to take.
I feel like to be a Democrat in Oklahoma, you would probably have to be a real ballsy.
You know who
are
the best Democrats in the world are Texas Democrats. Texas Democrats, because they can't. Jim Hightower is from Texas. Molly Ivins is from Texas. They're funny. They have to have a sense of humor to be Democrats in Texas. They're also progressive and awesome.
Yeah.
It's just that
I'm assuming the same thing is probably what's
happening. It's
got to
be true in Oklahoma, right? Tennessee, Clinton up 23. Texas, Clinton's up 26. Vermont, Sanders is up 75.
Yeah.
Genius. Virginia, Clinton's up 20. Yeah. American Samoa is also voting.
Yeah, and so are Democrats abroad.
Yeah. I don't know who those people are and what happens, but good for them.
So well anyway, done. Look for Massachusetts. But if Sanders can win Massachusetts, if he wins Minnesota, if he wins Colorado, if he wins Oklahoma, these are all big ifs. That's the dream night for him.
Right.
There is a chance that he could actually lose all of those.
Yeah. No, all of these are, none of these are besides, he's going to win Vermont, but none of them besides Vermont are states that gimmies. He has a, yeah.
Right.
And all of them, because the night is going to favor Clinton, are it's going to be a big if, whether he can get that many states in.
Right.
He's still going to be in the race regardless.
Right, exactly. He's going to win delegates in all these places.
He's going to win delegates in all of these places. He's not going to be, you know, the news is talking like he's insurmountably behind and can never catch up.
Right.
That's not going to be the reality of what happens after Super Tuesday.
No.
There are a zillion states still to go, and many of them
and
are quite
ones.
Large.
Yeah, he's already talking about California and New York. He did it recently.
Yeah,
he talked about on to
and
after Super
that's,
Tuesday.
I mean, that's where he should be coming to these states that not only provide the sort of like stronghold, you know, the delegate stronghold in the sense that we have something like 500 and some odd delegates. We have more delegates than any other state in the country. But also, we have a big activist stronghold in New York and California. So there is a chance that a lot of the grassroots excitement and manpower comes from these states for the other states in the region.
Yeah.
And that's they're worth focusing on, I think, solely for that. And I am thrilled to be able to say that and believe it.
Yeah.
I never get to talk about California and New York being important. But here we are.
Yeah.
We're important, guys.
Right.
But
now
the GOP night.
Now we're going to give you the GOP polls.
Looks
and besides the fact
bananas.
That Trump has won 3 of the 4 states, 3 in a row,
mm-hmm.
part of the reason why everyone is freaking the fuck out this week is because of what we're about to tell you.
Yeah.
Because here are the states that are, it's the same states.
You guys.
But here are the averages of what's going on the GOP side. Alabama, Trump up an average of 18 points, toss up for second place.
Also, who cares? At that point. Yeah. Don't even care about second place.
There's Alaska. There's not been any recent polls. There was one done in January with Trump ahead. If he was ahead in January, he's certainly ahead now.
Yeah.
So add Alaska to the list. Arkansas, again, not very many polls being done here. There was a poll sort of recently that showed Cruz with a small lead, but there's no way to really know what's going on there.
Also,
nobody spent a lot of
not one of the more
there,
important states in
no, exactly.
this
small.
Run.
Same,
no polling in Colorado.
Same with Colorado.
Colorado, libertarian, though, they're going to go Trump.
Yeah, I agree. Georgia, Trump up an average of 16 points. Again, toss up for second place, Cruz and Rubio. Massachusetts, Trump up an average of 26 points. Toss up between Rubio and Kasich for second place.
Things are bananas, everybody.
Yeah. Trump up an average of 2 points in Minnesota. There hasn't been a ton of recent polling there.
And it's all from before Iowa.
Before
so,
Iowa.
Like, who even knows what's happening
in
Minnesota?
And again, I say the same thing I did about whatever that last state was. If he was up
Alabama.
2 points in December
or
January
Alaska. Yeah,
or whatever it was.
He's not up less now.
He's not up less now. Right, exactly. So he's going to... Texas... So Texas...
He's up by 7 in Oklahoma. You just skipped Oklahoma.
I skipped Oklahoma.
He skipped Tennessee.
Sorry. I skipped
a bunch. A poll from early February has him up 20 in Tennessee.
Right. Texas is the GOP one to look at.
Yeah.
I think. If you're going to
It's the GOP's
anywhere,
California.
Yes, exactly. But yeah, exactly. Because it's huge.
It has a lot of delegates. It has 252 delegates or something
right.
like that.
And there have been polls that have shown this tightening. And Ted Cruz is obviously, you know, the favorite son. There.
Right.
I mean, he's probably the least
and
favorite.
Honestly,
son,
if
I mean,
Ted Cruz doesn't
there.
Win Texas, Ted
right.
Cruz is not a contender anymore
well,
in this race.
Agreed. He can't lose. He's up an average of 7 points, but there have been polls showing him only ahead by 1% or tied of late. And the thing about, I would say, if he only wins by 7 points, I still also think is no longer.
No, he has
because
to.
Because here's the other thing about Texas, and I think what is going to make him furious is that in Texas, if you win over 50% of the vote, then you get all of the assigned state
right.
delegates.
Anything
like,
but the superdelegates.
Right, exactly. And so
that's 190 something.
He's
or
not
something
anywhere
delegates.
Near that right now. And at one point he was.
Right.
So his big hope to get a bunch of delegates. I mean, he could win Texas and only Texas and basically catch back up if he were to get over 50%, and it's not going to happen for him.
Yeah.
So if he wins something, you know, 35 to 26 or whatever, I'm making things up, but right. like that is still an embarrassment.
And it's not going to be enough.
It's not enough. So
it's and that's also that race is the only reason that Ted Cruz is still a contender in this race.
Exactly. Yeah.
He doesn't have the establishment backing that Rubio does. He does not have the hope that he appeals to anyone anywhere else, basically. Yeah. Texas is sort of his Texas pedigree is the reason he is in this race right now. Yeah. And he might discover that he's not as beloved as he once was.
Yeah. But he's also going to win. He's going to win Vermont. He's going to win Virginia, too, which is not
a big state.
Not a small one. So, you know, that's why everybody's freaking the fuck out, because he could win every single one of these states. It's a very real possibility. We're talking about a brokered convention. He might not need it.
No. That's what I think we all realized this week after
the
Nevada
thing. This was
the
week where everybody was like, oh, shit.
Like, they were thinking they would be able to sort of, like, procedurize him out of this win. And I think that it's going to become too hard to even do that.
Yeah. You can't.
The guy who's clearly winning every single state cannot be procedured out of the win.
No, you can't win. You can't get second in the first state and then win the next 14 and then hope that there's going to be a brokered convention. Like, that's not how life works.
No, that's not math, guys. That's not it.
No, they've never been good at math.
Specialists in math. No. They're not specialists.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, another interesting thing that happened this week that I don't know if it's having the effect that I think it should have on the Super Tuesday races, but I think it will have an effect later on in terms of how some of these bigger states like California and New York start reacting to Hillary Clinton.
Yeah.
The New York Times editorial page wrote a scathing editorial calling for her to release the transcripts of her speeches.
And they've endorsed her, by the way.
Yeah, and they've already endorsed her to release her transcripts on Goldman Sachs, to the banks. It's like a pretty epic takedown, not only of this particular situation, but of the whole sort of campaign ethos, which is what's so interesting about it. It starts like this. "Everybody does it" is an excuse expected from a mischievous child, not a presidential candidate. But that is Hillary Clinton's latest defense for making closed-door, richly paid speeches to big banks, which many middle-class Americans still blame for their economic pain, and then refusing to release the transcripts.
Yeah.
In reference to her saying that she's being held to a different standard, because she continues to say that, they say, "The only different standard here is the one Ms. Clinton set for herself by personally earning $11 million in 2004 and the first quarter of 2005 for 51 speeches to banks and other groups and industries."
Well, and because she's the only one who claims to be running against these people.
Well, that's what they say next. Because my reaction to that was also, she's running in the Democratic primary.
Right,
she keeps saying the Republicans should do it too.
Sanders released his. He
doesn't have any. But the Republicans are openly running a pro-Wall Street platform.
Right.
They are not promising to take to be tough on Wall Street.
Except
Trump. But I believe him. I don't think Trump gives a shit about Wall Street. But I mean, they are not promising anything that would lead us to be shocked if they were delivering paid speeches to banks. They're saying they love the banks. They think the banks are what keep us safe or whatever. You know, like, I mean, they're making a connection to the banks that is not the same as what she is saying at all. And it's not, they're not in the same race.
Yeah.
So they don't have to release their speech. I mean, I would love to see what they've been saying, but it would just confirm everything I always knew about them.
Yeah.
Hillary Clinton is doing some double talk, and that's what's troubling here.
Yeah.
So then the Times agreed with me and Brent and said, her conditioning her release on what the Republicans might or might not be doing is mystifying. Republicans make no bones about their commitment to Wall Street deregulation and tax cuts for the wealthiest Americans. Ms. Clinton is laboring to convince struggling Americans that she will rein in big banks despite taking their money. And then they said this of her sort of personal vetting process as she got into this race. And this is something that we have been talking about since 2013 and will continue to talk about till the end of time because we can never stop, because this is so obvious and annoying to us that no one's listening. They said, "The hazards of Mrs. Clinton, a presidential hopeful earning more than $200,000 each for dozens of speeches to industry groups, were clear from the start. Mrs. Clinton was making paid speeches when she hired consultants to vet her own background in preparation for a run. If they didn't flag this, they weren't doing their jobs."
Yep.
And that's really part of what has sort of struck us about her candidacy this whole time, is her personal vetting process has been fucked.
Yeah, it has.
I mean,
and add this to the list of things that make her just a total garbage candidate.
Like, let her be your candidate, Democratic Party. Run an actual stranger.
Yeah.
I mean, that is literally who beat her last time. A rando. And it's turned out pretty good. I feel good about it. And that is what's happening now, is a total rando
Has
come up. Bernie Sanders is beloved, has been beloved by me and Brent for decades.
Yeah.
He is a total rando to most Americans. Is not a, he's a political hero to a tiny sliver of the left. Yeah. And then, and he's become the political hero to everyone because she's a garbage candidate.
That's right.
In any case.
And the Republicans are licking their chops running against her, by the way.
Oh,
I don't know
I
how
mean,
many, if you hear any Republican talk about running against Hillary Clinton, it's A, excitement, but it's them talking about how she's a flawed candidate.
Yeah.
And I don't want to, necessarily give credence to what some of these like
no,
Republican
their,
goons
their
are talking about.
Their theories of why are wrong.
Their theories of why are wrong, but they're also not wrong.
No, exactly. The Times closes on this. Public interest in these speeches is legitimate, and it's the public, not the candidate, who decides how much disclosure is enough.
That's right.
And that's
yeah.
also true.
I heard Sanders, during one of his speeches, either yesterday or today, he had like a pretty funny line about this, too. And he was like, he said something to the effect of, if she's giving a speech where she's paid $200,000, that speech should be good enough that you would want to release to the American people to hear. Sort of like, if you're making $200,000 a speech,
should be
then
a great
like,
speech.
Should be a
That's
great
a lot.
speech.
That's
like,
a
let's,
lot.
Let us, I want to hear a $200,000
exactly.
speech.
Exactly. I would love to learn from the pen of a $2,000 speech writer, or $200,000 right. speech writer.
Yeah.
Obama also, in non-electoral news, released his closing Gitmo plans.
Right,
They're not going to go forward, but it's nice of him to try.
Yeah, uh-huh. Republicans talked a lot about this week, about how that wasn't going to happen.
Exactly.
But Donald Trump, I think the debate was like, or at a speech was like, we're not going to close Gitmo, we're going to...
make Cuba pay for
gonna,
it, basically.
Right. Well, and then he was like, we're going to put more bad guys in it.
Yeah. I was like, okay, Donald Trump.
Yeah.
We're holding 91 people still there. And remember, a few months ago, there was some controversy over where we would actually move these people if we closed Gitmo, which is another source of controversy. Because Colorado, where the... you know, prison industrial complex is basically headquartered, did not want them. So in any case, there's like zero chance of this happening. But what's interesting is that McCain is sort of doing some double talk on this issue because he wants to close Gitmo. He's talked about this quite a bit. He said he would give the plan a hearing in his committee, but then was like, it's vague and we're not going to do anything about it. So too bad. also,
guys,
another unrelated story that's important for you to know.
Yeah.
Antonin Scalia, who died last week, was part of an insane secret hunting society, that's who he was with when he died.
Yeah, he's apparently a high-ranking member of the International Order of Saint
Hubertus,
which is an Austrian society founded in the 1600s.
That is some
is
Illuminati
that,
shit.
Yes.
I do not want to know that anyone is in that society.
Yes.
I think that those people are probably plotting some sort of weird giant government conspiracy.
Yeah. Their Latin slogan is... honoring God by honoring his creatures, which means killing them.
Diligite animalia diligentis.
Nicely done.
Thanks. There's no... The reason that I was able to tackle that and not French is there is no correct way to pronounce Latin. I learned that in my junior high school Latin classes, guys.
Sure.
You can say Latin however you want. So in any case, this is... Yeah, it's under the protection of the King of Spain.
Yes.
And other European royalty.
Royalties are involved somehow.
And named for the patron saint of hunters and fishermen, Hubert.
Yeah.
And the American chapter was founded in 1966 in San Francisco, of all places.
But that's who he was with.
That's who he was with.
Yeah.
His Illuminati friends.
God.
Also, if this is what the Illuminati's up to, I don't think they're as great as we might have initially...
No.
Or as smart as we might have initially thought.
No, I agree.
So I think that we can stop worrying that Beyonce and Jay-Z are taking over the world if this is what the Illuminati's up to.
Yeah. Speaking of the Supreme Court, the Republicans are blocking everyone.
Yeah.
They're not hearing anyone.
That their policy is just to not hear anyone
and
not do their jobs at all.
Yeah. Mitch McConnell said it this week. Chuck Grassley said it this week, who is...
who I refer to as Chuck Deer Accident Grassley.
That's right.
Do you remember his deer tweets?
His tweets, he's got a pretty great Twitter, by the way.
If you're not following
Chuck Grassley,
you shouldn't
do it.
Follow his ideas, but you should follow his Twitter account.
Yeah.
They're saying they're not going to hold any hearings to replace Scalia until the next president takes office. I'm curious what they're going to do if Bernie Sanders, or Donald Trump for that matter, is the next nominee. Because the other thing that Mitch McConnell has been saying is in secret is that they're going to distance themselves from Donald Trump ASAP. They are currently working on a plan to distance the Senate Republicans from Donald Trump. It's getting harder with Jeff Sessions now endorsing him, but who knows what's going on.
Right.
But so I'm sort of curious what they think their odds are in this race. Like, don't hold off on appointing somebody. You already, like... This is just like another example of what Trump is talking about, where nothing is working.
Yeah, I agree.
It doesn't make sense to do that.
Yeah.
So in any case, there is not a good outcome for them on this.
No, there's not.
Like, do it now.
Yeah.
Because there are some worst case scenarios that are going on out there.
Yeah.
Hillary Clinton is the best case scenario you could hope for
in
this circumstance.
Although my guess is that
they never appoint anyone.
Could be. Just
they're gonna keep letting him die, and suddenly we'll have seven on the court, and then it'll be different again.
Right. My guess is that part of what becomes of this GOP race is that Ted Cruz assures himself being a Supreme Court nominee.
Interesting.
In the next administration. Yeah, that's what he wants.
I could see that.
He'd rather do that than be president.
I mean, he's a lawyer. That's his thing. He's not a politician, clearly, because he's an asshole.
A senator, even though they all hate him. But I mean,
as asshole-ish.
They would approve him.
I think they would not. And I'll tell you why. Because I think without a filibuster-proof majority, there is not a Democrat out there would allow Ted Cruz to become the next Supreme Court Justice.
Yeah.
There is not one Democrat. He is not even loved. There might not even be one Republican. He is not loved or cooperative, and he's not cooperated with anyone in the Senate since he has gotten there. Yeah. They do not like him there. They are going to have to vote in favor of him on the record for somebody who tried to upend their entire party and then convince something like 4 or 5 Democrats to get on board with them.
Yeah.
And I don't know who those Democrats are, but those that would be a choice that would never get through.
Yeah.
I mean, if the Democrats allowed that to happen, by the way, I would never vote Democratic again. Yeah. That's some fucking nonsense.
Yeah.
In any case, I say that all the time and then I keep voting for them. I'm in a battered relationship with an abusive relationship with the Democrats.
But
Brian Sandoval asked to be taken out of contention for Obama's
thank God, so we're not going to have a Republican governor
to
the court.
Do not claim this choice.
God.
If they're saying they're not going to appoint anyone.
Right, you pick the nuttiest.
A fucking hippie.
Total, yes. I mean, yeah, exactly.
Like, don't be
whoever
this guy.
The most progressive activist judge that is currently alive
should
be your nominee if you're not going to get him through anyway.
Right. You don't need to look cooperative anymore.
No.
The Democratic Party is about to vote for a Democratic Socialist. They're not going to be sad if you appoint a Democratic Socialist to the court.
They are not. They are going to be mad if you
appoint Brian Sandoval to the court.
Exactly.
That's not a thing that you should be doing.
Yeah. But I think that this was probably smart on his part. If he
he didn't want to become a punching bag in this discussion.
He's very qualified to be on the Supreme Court. He's supposedly the most moderate.
He's
in
pro-choice.
Abortion rights. And he was on the circuit court of somewhere.
Nevada, somewhere.
And I mean, you know, so he has...
He's been the attorney general in Nevada.
Right, exactly. So he is the type of person that we were not living in the world that we lived in now, could probably sail through a nomination to the Supreme Court.
But
this is a
Clintonian classic. Right.
And as a GOP person, you don't want to be the person who is like, you know, becomes the person that the GOP is attempting to take
don't
down.
Don't become the political
punching
bag.
Politically, I guess, I get why maybe that was just sort of like a smart person to kind of just like float out.
Right,
as a
because
name.
Then
because
it would show that they were never going
to
do anything.
It makes them look ridiculous for like not even wanting to like
consider
have a
one of their own
on
guys.
Somebody who is from their own party.
Yeah.
Right. So in that respect, it made sense. But in the respect of actually going through with it,
it doesn't make any sense at all.
Yeah.
So that's going to be I wonder if the Supreme Court will just dwindle.
Yeah.
Like suddenly it'll be a court with like 3 justices.
Right. But we need a person who is a liberal on the Supreme Court. And let me tell you why.
Because Ruth Bader Ginsburg is 1,000 years old.
Right. And Iowa is trying to arm children right now.
Holy shit. You guys.
So this Iowa bill needs to quickly get itself in front of a left-leaning Supreme Court.
Yeah.
Because there are going to be children in Iowa running around shooting you.
Yeah. Iowa might launch a children's army that takes over like Nebraska or something at this rate. We don't know what their game is.
Yeah. The House of Representatives on Tuesday passed a bill that would permit children under the age of 14 to use a pistol, revolver, or ammunition while under direct parental supervision.
Do not give deadly force to children in any circumstance with any amount of supervision.
No.
I don't care if
this
you
this was not what the founding fathers intended, by the way, guys.
No, this is not it. I have a lot of questions about what the founding fathers intended.
Well, I do too. But
in
it definitely
place.
Wasn't
but
this.
But one thing I know for absolute certain is that children were never supposed to have guns.
No.
Children cannot operate motor vehicles. They cannot purchase homes. There are a lot of things that we don't let children do for good reason.
That's right.
They are not responsible.
Yeah.
They are children.
Have deadly weapons should be one of them.
Having deadly weapons should absolutely be one of them.
Yeah.
They're not the right choice for for your deadly weapon use.
No.
The Democratic state rep there, what's her name? Kirsten Running Marquette. Said, we do not need a militia of toddlers. And she's right.
She's absolutely right.
Yeah.
Thankfully, the state Senate is still in Democratic control. There may be Democrats that are pro-gun rights in Iowa.
This
I'm not
too
sure what's going on
rights,
there.
This is pro-gun rights, though. This is an amount of being pro-gun rights that's not the right amount.
But the Senate needs to put an end to this because the governor would probably sign it because he's a nut.
Yeah. This is a bad plan through and through.
Yeah.
Don't give your children guns.
Don't do it.
And that's the PSA that we're going to end on today. Right. Tuesday is Super Tuesday.
Yeah. So follow us on Twitter.
Follow us on Twitter. Watch the news.
That's right.
Just like really get your life together on Tuesday. That's
right. Things are going to be happening.
Things are happening.
We're going to be getting like results.
Might be a great day. Might be a bad
20-something
day.
20-something results between the two parties.
Yeah. It's going to be a bonanza of information.
That's right. You're going to need us to help.
You're going to need us. Exactly. And we'll probably post some sort of rundown of it after the fact.
Yeah.
But follow us on the day because we're going to be delightful. Yeah. Do that. Follow us on Facebook. Follow us on Instagram.
Twitter.
Go to braintrustlive.com and just write. Oh, check out. We posted a post last week that is our most popular blog post ever that was not written by us.
Right. We didn't write it.
That my mother, who was on the podcast last week, wrote. So check that out.
It's great.
Leave a comment if you want.
Yeah.
And we will talk to you next week.
Bye.
Bye.